Welcome to Staging Business Behind the Scenes. I'm your host, Janet Davis. I'm also a trained musician, actor, and dancer. But most importantly for our conversation, I'm a seasoned expert in nonprofit administration with a specialty in working with leadership teams and boards at arts and cultural organizations. My mission is to make sure that the artists of our time have everything they need to make our hearts beat faster, bring us peace, help us find something in common with someone else, thrill us with athleticism and talent, or tell a story that needs to be told in a way that all of us can understand. I've learned over the years that the tricky business of creativity is often underplanned, underdeveloped, and underled. And if we don't do anything about it, the theaters, orchestras, museums, art halls, and dance companies that are telling the stories of our communities will not survive. We're here to help the administrators, the leaders behind the scenes, the managing directors, financial directors, development directors, facilities teams, and marketers. Each week, we will pull back the curtain on a topic important to our listeners. Whether you are a member of the leadership team, a board member, or a staff member, our objective is to help you have your best ideas yet as we shine a spotlight on various challenges and opportunities of arts management. Strategy, operational planning, earned and contributed income, technology, and facilities, to name a few. I'm Janet Davis, and this is Staging Business Behind the Scenes. Join me as we master the business of creativity. Welcome to Episode 3, Proximity and Empathy, an Artist's Perspective. Today's episode features Mohammed Fofana, a Los Angeles-based emerging artist and entrepreneur. He and I spent some time talking about his perspective on creating, the influence of his family and friends on his art, and how he believes relationships are an essential part of any business. Our conversation about his perspective and the need for administrators to develop relationships with artists and audiences reminded me of Chapter 6 of Ford Foundation President Darren Walker's book, From Generosity to Justice. In that chapter, Walker addresses the importance of proximity in the context of the social sector, both in philanthropy and the operations of nonprofit organizations. In this setting, proximity is best described in the subtitle of that chapter as, quote, valuing both expertise and experience. He quotes David Rockefeller Jr., who told him, through proximity, you enable yourself to lose the discomfort that comes from erroneous judgment. Walker goes on to say that however uncomfortable you feel talking to someone of a different race, class, ability, or background, you'll feel even more uncomfortable if you get it wrong from the safety of an office. Also quoted in Walker's book is Laura Andreessen, founder and president of the Laura Arriaga Andreessen Foundation, who argues that, quote, equally important to proximity and fully integrated into it is having empathy for those we aspire to serve and empower and uplift. Empathy is the crux of design thinking, which is the framework I use for all the organizations that I've built and the resources that I've created. And it's essential not only for the functioning of philanthropy, but also, I would argue, for the functioning of our democracy and the evolution of our souls. Leaders of arts organizations have an especially complex opportunity for proximity and empathy. In other words, relationship. When was the last time you spent significant time in proximity to the artists whose work you present, or the audiences you aim to inspire, not counting the time they spend experiencing your venues and your institutions? How do you practice active and measurable empathy for your artists and audiences? I offer for your consideration that genuine awareness and understanding of art and culture can be one of the most significant disruptors of our comfort as arts managers, as well as the comfort of our artists, audiences, and supporters. To be in proximity to and to practice empathy for artists requires time, energy, and the opening of our minds in a way that is far different than doing so for people experiencing homelessness or food insecurity. When we choose to be in proximity to artists, it is not generally to care for them as we seek to do for our neighbors we choose to help in the social service sector. With our artists, it is usually to be entertained, to measure, judge, label, or assimilate their work. There's an important movement today that aims to address the fact that the art we choose to produce and present must reflect the audiences we serve. And the artists we support create work that allows our communities to recognize themselves and their stories in the work. During our conversation, Mohammed described this in the most compelling way I have heard. His goal is to reach audiences who not only recognize themselves in his art, they come away from the experience saying, "I am worthy enough to be the art." I hope you are inspired by Mohammed's stories and his passion for being an artist. And I hope you're motivated to get to know an emerging artist in your community, seeking proximity and empathy, and then to work with your teams to develop ways arts and nonprofit administrators can better value both expertise and experience in their relationships with artists and audiences. With that, welcome, Mo. I'm so glad you're here with us today. Please open up and just tell us a little bit about you and your brand.
So a little bit about me. I was born in the Ivory Coast in West Africa. I moved to the United States when I was 11 years old, 10 or 11. It's been a long time now. And MF The Brand has been, I guess, the continuation of like my artistry from when I first moved here to like now. Last year I did an art show in my hometown, Memphis, Tennessee, which is where I grew up. And when I was doing like research and putting all of the pieces and things together, I found a common thread of, you know, where my artistry began and like the roots of it. So when I first moved here to the United States at 11, not knowing, you know, the culture, the place, not having friends, one of the things that I used to do is I used to draw. I used to go get magazines and I would draw like celebrities and things of that nature. Now, then when I got acclimated to the way of life and, you know, sports took over, I was doing all of that. But even within that, I feel like the art just took a background. You know, I was still like drawing, doodling here, but it was not like every day when I first moved here. So piggyback to like 2016, I moved to San Jose, California to work for the San Jose Sharks. So I'm in a new city. I don't know many people there. So I would just go home. I would go to work and then come back and go home. And so being one of my like first time having my own place, new apartment, new city, I was like, I want to decorate my place. But I don't want to like buy anything. I want to make things. And then so I went and bought canvas and then started drawing and painting and things of that nature. So I see a common thread is that in my life that I saw when I was planning the show is that if there's nothing else, if I have nothing else, I have my creativity to go to. I have art to go to. Art is always there to, you know, hold me together until people or things come. And things of that nature. So MF The Brand was born out of me expressing myself. I wanted to create a space, you know, when I moved to San Jose, that when I came home, it felt like this is my place. It felt welcoming. It felt safe. It felt vibrant. I felt like I finally, you know, have a place where I can decorate. I can make changes. I call the shots, you know? And so it came from that, and I would create, I would draw on canvas, then went from there. Then I started drawing on hats and shirts and jackets. So anything I could get my hands on, I would just like, you know, let me create something. I wanted to create something that was unique. I think that's what motivated me to not just go to Target or any home goods stores and buy art. I wanted to create art that came from me. My mission became to share that joy that art brought me to other people, right? I wanted to create unique items for, you know, friends and people that just love creativity, that love art, that, you know, want to display their, you know, their style and their individualism and just, you know, their love for something like cool and different. And so like, you know, my mission is to inspire people to be creative, inspire people to dream, and to just go for it. I'm not a trained artist. I didn't go to school to learn how to draw and rules and stuff like that. I just, you know, follow my instinct. I follow, you know, what I love and my intuition, and just kind of went from there. And the more that I painted, the more that I created, the better I was able to, you know, find my voice and find my style, and you know, every day I continue to better my artistry. So yeah, I would say MF the Brand is a brand about dreamers. You know, it's a brand for dreamers. It's a community. You know, I want to build a community. It's about just believing in yourself, believing in your voice, you know, and just going for it, because that's what I did. So yeah, that's a little bit about MF the Brand.
As artists, we have to put ourselves in situations and in a mindset where, and I, we can like run head on with an idea. Like it's almost like, it sort of has a sonic way of coming into our entity, and you can know when it's coming. And
absolutely.
You have to be ready, because it can leave as fast as it arrives. But it's its own energy. And I thought, that is one of the most brilliant ways I've heard of describing that. And so how have you, you know, especially over the past few years, as you've navigated being in the entertainment industry, being in the, you know, being in the sports industry, and then being an entrepreneur, right? And then having the bravery to say, okay, I better darn well have a lot of these ideas coming in kicking me over the head. How have you balanced all those things in your mind to create time to allow those ideas to go into you?
You know, I was telling someone a couple of days ago, yesterday, about balance not being a thing. So I don't even try to like use it or find balance, because it's not a thing. But I love that quote that you just shared with me about, you know, ideas being their own energy. I recently just read a book by Rick Rubin. I'm forgetting the title of it, but it speaks about that. I didn't have the words for it, but I understood it in the sense of like energy, ideas. You know, we don't really own ideas. They're not yours. If you have an idea and you don't capitalize on it, it will go on to the next thing. And it was like, you see sometimes people be like, oh, I want to do something, and they don't. And then a couple months later or a year later, you see someone doing the same thing. You're like, oh, I wanted to do that. You know, it's just like, if you don't take it, if you don't like act upon it, it'll go. And so in my artistry, I find that how like my ideas and inspiration comes to me, it almost to me, you know, it feels spiritual. It's almost like a calling in a sense. I like to think that I am a vessel through which these ideas are coming from, because there are certain things that I've been able to create or put together that I don't have the word to describe how. You know, like I look at some of this, especially like at the beginning stage when I would create some stuff, again, because it goes from like, I didn't go to school for this, right? I have a lot of respect for people who go to school, who master things and whatever the case may be. Like I did sports, you know, I went to school for sport management and entertainment, whatever. So like working in the sport industry, like I felt very confident in it because I know, you know, I felt like I knew what I was doing in a sense. So like jumping into the art thing and creating, it was just, you know, like for fun, to express myself. Like there's no judgment. There's just freedom to just do. But I think like the more that you start getting into it, and then you see other people's art and whatever they could be, and then it starts the comparison, and then you start to think, oh, am I good enough? Am I legitimate? And then I think you start to just like all of these things come in. And so one of the things like I work really hard on is to just not let outside factors like cloud my judgment or just like affect my creativity, because at the end of the day, that's not where it stems from. Because I think if I laid claim to the idea, it didn't escape me. Then the idea was like, all right, cool. Like, it doesn't matter how long it takes you, it takes you to do this, but you've at least like laid claim to me, so I'm gonna hold on to you, you know. And so I would start jotting things down, and then sometimes it would be so urgent that it didn't matter if I had work at 7, I had to get up at 7 a.m. to go to work the next day. It didn't matter. I would be up the whole night because the idea would consume me. I would see an image, and it's like the image would speak to me. I am a vessel through which these arts are coming through. And so when this idea comes to you, you know, respect it, honor it, and act upon it. Even if you don't have the bandwidth right now to act upon it, lay claim to it so the idea stays with you. Just like art and sales and what we do, like not everyone is going to like what you offer, and what you offer is not going to be for everyone. And right, it's the same thing with my art. Like what I create is not going to speak to everyone, you know, and it's not supposed to. Collaboration is huge, right? Talking to different people from different departments and getting different ideas about things. You know, I think one of the things that helped me a lot when I was doing sales for the Sharks is that I collaborated with many different departments. I talked to many different people who didn't do what I did to get an understanding, like the perspective of, like, you know, someone like me reaching out to you and say, oh, do you want to buy tickets and this and that, like the approach, how important it is to listen to people, how important it is when you have an idea and you think it's the greatest idea ever to test it out on different people and share that with different people and make it a collaborative, you know, effort.
You describe yourself as an artivist, right?
Mm-hmm.
How do you prioritize that as an artivist? What kind of advice do you have for folks who are leading these nonprofit arts organizations?
I think it's important to get to know the artist. Again, especially for this big organization, they may have hundreds and hundreds of like different artists or different applications and stuff that they get. I understand it can be tough, but I think it's important to get to know artists, to get to know people's stories and listening to their stories. I find that a lot of my relationships, especially with nonprofits that I've worked with, and I've mentioned the Hispanic Foundation, Silicon Valley, because I mentioned them earlier, but many of them, we were able to have long-lasting relationship because we invested in knowing each other's story, right? And so I would go to bat for them in what I did with the Sharks and finding different ways to raise money for them because I know their story. I know what they were looking to do in the Hispanic community, you know, there in the Bay Area. And they also understood my position, understand that, hey, I have a job to do, right? And I have to, as much as I love to help in the things that I'm doing, I also have a quota to meet, but we can help each other, right? And so like me understanding like what they need for them to be successful in the things, in the packages and stuff that I will find for them internally, whether I was selling or finding different ways to raise the money, it allowed them to renew their package every year because they knew that I would go to bat for them and help them raise money every year. You know, to be like one of the top nonprofits, like you have to be a hustler. They also are great salespeople because you raise the money. And there is an art in raising money. There is an art to be able to talk to someone. There's an art to be able to like send your message to people and be direct and be stern and have facts and have numbers and just being able to convey, this is why we're doing this. This is why we need to raise someone. So $500 can feed 10 kids and $10,000 can provide 5 families with housing and food. And like there is numbers. And, you know, I think stories are super, super important. So I think that's what has helped me a lot in my career, especially working in hockey, where it was a sport that I didn't grow up watching. It was a sport that is not, I mean, it's gotten better in being diverse and bringing, you know, new voices and new people in, but still at its core, there's still a lot of work to do, you know? And so I find myself in a space where in the beginning, I felt othered because I look around, I didn't see many Black people. I didn't see, you know, many people of color. But I think how I was able to like bridge the gap is that by going and speaking to people in different departments and finding out, oh my God, you know, we have a lot of similarity. Oh, you went to University of Tennessee, so did I. You have multiple, you know, siblings, so do I. You love to read, so do I. You love fashion and expressing yourself, so do I. So it just moved the barrier often of just like looking at someone and be like, oh, like we don't look the same. It may look like we don't have nothing in common. But by having conversations, sitting down and sharing stories about who you are, it eliminates the barrier of just like, oh, we look different, so we don't have anything in common alike, right? And I think to be able to be in position to help people and to put people in position to succeed, it's important that you understand people's stories. So let's say you are a director at a, you know, art nonprofit and whatnot, and you take the time to invest in this artist that maybe want to be displayed or, you know, supported by you and one of those things. Like it inspires them to go hard, to create meaningful art, to want to just like let you know that, you know, I appreciate it. So like for me, anyone that's ever like, you know, bought my art or just give me compliments and whatever the case to be, like, I appreciate it because I understand you don't have to. And I understand art is also subjective. Just because it's beautiful to me doesn't mean it's going to be beautiful to you, you know? And so it means a lot. There's people like early in my career when I was creating things for myself and I would just like show decent pieces and stuff like that. And they'd be like, oh, this is great. You know, and at first I used to be like, sure, you just be nice and whatnot. But the more of just like, oh, like, you know, like when you become famous, don't forget about us or stuff like that. Or they just be like, this is great. I can see like, you know, it's getting better here and there. Like they were feeding, you know, me in ways that they didn't even understand that they were doing. As you know, a self-proclaimed like artist, for me, it's just like, again, being able to tell those different stories, right? And being able to tell stories, I feel like that matters to me, that matters to my community. Like I mentioned earlier, the art and the ideas are not mine. So I try not to put claim into it. And so if I'm going to be a vessel and tell stories, it can't just be about me.
As I've spent time with some of the images of your work, and really trying to, you know, understand, you are in service to some goddess, and I don't know who or goddesses, I don't know who she or they are, but there are some powerful women, female goddesses somewhere around you. And, you know, especially when I look at your work that you just unveiled last week, Black Women Deserve Happily Ever After Too. Mm-hmm. And I love that image so much. There are parts and focal points of the image, like the wedding ring, mm-hmm. right? That is so emblematic of mm-hmm. happily ever after. Like, okay, so that is a very Western, I think, concept of what it means to mm-hmm. be happily ever after. Okay, well, you meet your prince and you get a big ring and you live happily ever after, right? But what does that really mean? Mm-hmm. And, you know, and what is the concept of deserving it? I would just love to hear about your deference and your homage to women in your mm-hmm. work. And I would also love to hear about that work in particular.
I would like to think that I see my mother had a really huge influence on me growing up, and my older sister as well. So my mom has four boys, and my older sister grew up with us. And growing up with having four boys, me being the middle child, I had two little brothers that I was like, I'm 8 years and 11 years younger than, so I had to take care of them. So I had to learn how to like cook, clean, babysit, do all those different type of things. And so I grew up like watching my mom. My mom is a hairstylist. She does hair. So I grew up watching my mom just cater to women, listening to their stories. They would come down to her shop because her shop used to be at our house. So like we had like two living rooms. The other living room used to be her shop. So I grew up like watching women come, you know, to the shop, lay their hair down and just vent and tell stories and whatever the case may be. And so I think I've been influenced by that. I've been influenced by seeing how my mom like worked tirelessly to provide for us and just, you know, her work ethic just by her showing up every day. And so I took that with me in how I operate and just like show up every day, do what you have to do. I feel like that's like the Black woman motto is they always do what they have to do. And so I grew up seeing that. I also have an older sister that I grew up with, who was, I would say, like my first muse, you know. My older sister, you know, used to be like all the latest like trends, and you know, she put me on like pop culture, right? Because at the time, when I first, it was around the time when I first moved to America, like 11 to like early teenage years. Like my oldest, they've been here already, right? So I came and joined my family here. And so being introduced to like the pop culture and the way of life and whatever the kids to be, like she was like my first, like, you know, like signifier to see like what's hot, what's not, and whatever the kids to be. And just like listening to her, listening to like her stories of like, men that would try to date her in court and whatever the case to be. And we had a really good relationship. And so like I love my sister and my mom like dearly. So I learned early age like how to understand things from a woman's perspective, you know, how to be gentle, how to be, you know, respectful, and how to listen. The latest work that you're talking about, Black Women Deserve Happily Ever After. So that stemmed from two of my friends. The subject in there, her name is Ashley. I've known her. We actually went to school together, but at the University of Tennessee, but like our path didn't cross. I want to see, like, we knew of each other, but we really weren't friends. But we ended up like reconnecting when we both worked for the Memphis Grizzlies. We worked together for like a year and a half or whatever the case may be. And then, you know, we went on to different jobs and whatnot, but we still remained friends. And one of the things, you know, we would catch up and talk about life and things of that nature. And again, same thing, I would hear about like relationships and things that she was dealing with and all those different kind of things and whatnot. And so last year, I was back in Memphis for my art show, which she came out to, and all those different kind of stuff. And I remember us talking with the guy that she's currently, you know, engaged to now. We were talking about him, and you know, he had asked her to get like her nails done and whatever, and she was like, I like this work because he never asked me then, whatever. And I was like, what are the odds that like you know, you could be engaged in this and that? And literally a couple of days later, because I'm friends with him too, funny enough, he sends a message in our group chat of that image that I painted. I was like, he proposed. And so when I saw that image and I saw like the joy that exuded from her, and knowing that, you know, like she's been, I don't know if working for it, I don't know, but it just like it was just, I was like, finally, like you deserve this, you know, not necessarily because it's just like the man or just whatever, but it's just like you deserve to feel this joy, this happiness that you're feeling because you worked for this, you know, you worked for this, you know, you were patient. There was like ups and down in this relationship and things of that nature, but you know, you held on strong. And I didn't have a title for it, you know, like when he came to me, I just was gonna paint it. But you know, that picture is a lineage of a story that I've heard in my life from many Black women who oftentimes like put their happiness secondary to the things that they have to do, you know. And so I wanted to speak to that. I wanted to speak to her. I wanted to speak to all women. And also I wanted to speak to also just like, you know, men in my life as well. So like a lot of my art that I do, it's also codified in a lot of messages because it's easier to have conversation when it's like, you know, it's not like preaching to people and like do this, do that, how to make women happy and whatever the case may be. But it's just understanding that, you know, like there's more that we can do to give to one another. And then like I went by my day, I went to a yoga class, and then after the yoga class, I was just like kind of like, you know, walking around, and the title came to me. And I said, ha, grab it. This is perfect. You know, because it was just sitting there for the longest. It was, you know, untitled. And again, this one of the things that, again, I've learned, sometimes like the art comes in, it's fully packaged, it knows its name, it's know what it's going to be, and sometimes it come in bits and pieces. it's such a as a as an artist, as a creator, to have someone be like, you know, like, I can't believe you painted me, in a sense of like not feeling deserving to be, you know, captured. So in a sense, it's like I find myself like painting my friends and telling their stories and letting them know like your story matters too. Everyone's stories matter, you know. So to go back to like what I said earlier about like art directors and things of that nature, stories matter. Everyone has a story. And no matter how much our stories are, you know, alike and things of that nature, there's also some differences, right? But there's also a lot of commonality in it as well. You know, it makes the world smaller. It creates, you know, this community when you're able to share your story, because someone would be like, ha, huh, this happened to me too, or I can relate to that, right? And then it just makes our differences, you know, go away. And I think then we're able to move on a human level, right? So then I'm not going to be moving in a way to offend you or do things that I know is going to harm you, because like I understand how that will make you feel. I understand the things that make you tick and things of that nature. And so for me, it brings me joy when I'm able to like paint my friends and I'm like, I created this, and they see themselves and they can't believe that, you know, that they're now the subject. I want to have like my friends and my community and people that I know to have those feelings, to feel like I am worthy enough to be art.
Wow. I am worthy of being that art. It's not just I'm worthy to experience it, or I'm worthy enough to be in this place with these other people. It's I'm worthy to be it. And that is the whole point.
Yes. And like you mentioned, as far as this patronage and access is so important, to be able to see, to be invited, right? To have a seat at the table, to say you can come and enjoy this too. So when I had my art show in Memphis in August last year, my mom, she pulled up deep. She invited all her friends, like, my son is having an art show. You guys are going to come see it. And mind you, many of these women have never been to an art show before, because it's just like, to take the time out of their day to go to a museum or a gallery is non-existent. That's
right.
Not
it's
a thing.
Luxury.
That's not
it's
a
thing. Yeah.
It absolutely luxury. Because it's just like, I got to go to work. I got to feed my kids. I got bills and things, you know. So to just take time to say, hey, just come out and just enjoy yourself. You know, I wanted to offer that to like my community and my friends and people from where I come from, because oftentimes just it's a luxury that people don't feel like they can afford. Because I remember when my mom came to, I guess, when I was putting the show together, the rehearsal, but not, she was like, so what are we supposed to do? I was like, I had to like simplify. I was like, imagine it's like a movie, right? But it's just in frames. So there's a story. So you start at this area here, and then you go and you just kind of look at the art and whatever the case to be. And then you piece it together. Whatever it speaks to you, that's what you get out of it, right? And, you know, I remember her saying, she was like, wow, this is nice. This is different. I was like, you know, you've never been to art. She was like, when else would I have time to go to art show? You know, like what would have brought me to it? Because again, it's just that thing. It's just like, no one has ever invited me out to it. I don't really understand it. And I don't have the time for it and whatnot. And so by having it there, it just allowed people to just, you know, like, yes, you have bills, you have things to do and whatever the case may be, but I wanted to offer an experience. I wanted them to take time out of their day to just come and enjoy and be. Like, it wasn't until, I would say, the Barack Obama presidential portrait that I learned of Kehinde Whiteley, right? I was like, oh, there's someone who looks like me who has the access to be able to get this type of honor. So, okay, it's just, all right, it's possible kind of things, you know. But, I mean, there's many, you know, Black artists that's come before, they've done great work. But I think in just, like, in where I've been, I have an access to know their history. And so oftentimes when you don't know the history, you don't think that there's space for you there to thrive. I'm very sure, you know, I created from a place where it's not about, oh, it's just going to be financially successful. Yes, there's a financial component to where you want to create a good business, you want to sell and things of that nature. But when I'm creating art, you know, is this in line with my intention? Is this in line with the story that I want to tell? Is this in line in what I represent? If it is, create it. The finance, the money and stuff like that, it'll come when it'll come. But do not let that be the center of your art, right? And I made a post a couple of days ago and whatever, like, I create art that if no one sells it, I mean, no one buys it, no one cares for it, I care for it because I love it, because I know the story that it's coming from. I know the people, the subjects that's in there that will see it, how it would make them feel, what it would do for them. So create from that and never lose that. So whenever I find myself, like, you know, in a space where I'm like having creative blocks and whatever the case may be, just experience life, just live life. And as life goes on, those things will come.
Thanks so much for being with us today. I hope that this conversation inspires you as much as it inspired me. If you want to support Mo and his work and learn more about MF The Brand, check it out on socials and mfthebrand.com. If you want to talk more about this topic, head over to www.clarksondavis.com and send me a contact. Take good care, and I hope you get to do something creative today.